Hi, Holly. Nice to see you again, and welcome to the Mummy and Money show. And I know you were working in a public accounting firm. You were CFO of a big corporation. Now you're on your own. Now, why not you just tell us a little bit about what you're doing right now?
Okay, I will. So thank you for having me on the Mommy and Money. I love it. And so good to connect with you, Jasmine, and your audience. So yes, you're right. Exactly. I spent a lot of time at a CPA firm as an auditor, dabbled in tax, and went on to work as a CFO in a bigger company. And finally, I just decided it was time to go. And I wasn't learning as much as I wanted to. And so that is a really big takeaway. That really, if you're not in a continual state of learning, it's time to go. If you're comfortable, it's time to go. So I realized it was time to go, made sure my company was well taken care of, and I, ended up going off on my own. So, Jasmine, I would say that the first thing I'm going to say about this is I did not plan appropriately. Okay, so. One would think that a CPA would be planning and getting it ready, and you're a planner. I mean, you would have done a better job, Jasmine. And I'd love to hear about your story one day, And so I would have done a better planning. I would have gotten a coach and somebody to help me plan before my exit from corporate, from the paycheck, the one that you've been used to your whole entire life. And then I went off on my own and I was like, okay, well, where's my value? And I know I had a lot of business background, and I did a lot of M&A when I was at my company. And when I did M&A, even though I was the accountant side of things, the CFO side of things, I would go with the president from the very first day, and we would do it together. And what I noticed is that there's some real value in having me as a partner. I didn't know that at the time. I mean, I did, but like now being on my own and being able to present that to my clients, there's some real value when you look at, when you look at M&A, everything's, oh, it's so easy. Let's just buy them and bring them, put them in. Okay. And it's not, I know you're
No, it's
shaking
not.
your head. It's not like that. And I'm like, if you look at like the failure rate as far as CEOs saying it met the objectives, the original objectives, it's like 50 to 80%. And I'm like, okay, well, the reason why is culture clashes, synergies being overestimated, poor integration planning. And what I didn't realize was that was something that I was plugging that gap along with due diligence, along with value in the company, and then quarterbacking the legal agreements. I didn't know that that not everybody did this. Okay, so I learned that. I was like, okay, that's a sweet spot. And then I learned, Jasmine, and I saw this when we met at a conference, and I saw this really loud and clear at the conference. There's so many small business, CEOs and entrepreneurs that don't have access to somebody that has the knowledge that I do and could really use it when you look at how many small businesses that actually don't make it. I know it's because of the fact that accounting and finance is one of those problems, one of those big problems, right? And so what I realized is that I'm going to spin myself up as a fractional, which is a part-time CFO, where I can help businesses be more profitable, figure out how to make that happen for them, and they can afford me then. And then I also see a real need for entrepreneurs that are like, I thought this business was going to be my exit plan. They made it through the failure rate of the 5 years, and they're down the line. They're still not making the profit they want. And they're like, I thought this was going to be my retirement. Or they put all their money into the retirement and they're not making the profit. So I was like, okay, let me help you get ready to sell. And so whether there's a long runway or a short runway. So I figured out that there was a need there maybe for my services. And then I started marketing myself. But again, you're not used to marketing yourself. You're not, there's a lot of things as your own entrepreneur, as you know, that you're just not used to doing.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. I love your entrepreneurship journey. And for me as well, like I'm a very new entrepreneur. I would say I do this full time for over 3 years, and it's a lot of learning along the way, a lot of things unexpected, do not go as planned, but like as an entrepreneur, you're always very optimistic. You know, how hard that can be. We can figure out as we go.
Right. I'm like, I was an executive. I know everything. No, I was humbled. I'm humbled many, many times over, honestly, every day about the things I don't know. And you know, I asked for that. I wanted a fun journey where I was learning more. But like, what did you, like, Jasmine, if I can ask you a question, like, what would you do differently in those, you know, you've been on this journey for 3 years. Is there anything you would do differently?
Like you mentioned before, I definitely would have an advisor or coach who done that before, and so I won't say take shortcut, but like at least I know what I'm getting into, and you know, certain mistake I probably can't avoid it. And you know, in the past 3 years, I did many ventures. One of them is digital mining. I pretty much built a digital mining site from scratch.
Wow.
And mm-hmm. we made a lot of mistakes. And another time, I wish, you know, we could hire someone actually done that before so we can avoid a certain mistake. But, you know, the result is good. We make it running, but take a little bit longer time and a little bit more money. So that's why I said sometimes you think you're paying someone is, you know, a lot of money, but like the mistake you make actually costs more money, especially the time. The time is something you cannot buy.
No, that's right. But what an invaluable experience. And, you know, one of the other things I think is really helpful when you're starting out on your own is having a group of people that you can tap on and a community that supports you. So I know, like, you know, I met you and I've met so many people in the community that I can just ask them for something. They can ask me, you know, like, honestly,
exactly,
reciprocal. And then we can help one another be successful. And that is one of the areas that I love so much outside of corporate is in corporate, I'm not clear. And the bigger the company is, I'm just not clear how much everybody supports one another because mm-hmm. everybody's trying to climb up the ladder and,
right.
you know, that sort of thing. And, but in entrepreneurship, there's enough for all. And
yeah.
so nobody's climbing over anybody here. Like we're all like, we're
unless you're a competitor. Yeah. It's a different story.
Yeah. But like, you know, so I'm really enjoying that aspect of it. And I am enjoying being humbled. Like, mm-hmm. I like it because that means I'm learning something and I'm like, okay, you know what, you know, you're not all that in a bag of chips. You don't know everything. So
yeah,
so
yeah,
I like
totally,
that.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I love that mindset, especially for me. Always people ask me, where do you hang out? Are you hanging out with all investors? I'm like, no, I don't like hang out with investors. I like hang out with entrepreneurs. That's, you know, I'm always looking for a deal, you know, unless I'm looking to raise money, maybe investor, but no matter the investor, well, they also try to raise money. That's why I'm going
you're
to
right.
certain conference. Yeah, I just find it's quite interesting. I like hang out, you know, where my crowd is, because being an entrepreneur and do your own business is very lonely, very, very lonely journey. No matter where you are, small or big, it is a very lonely journey. If you have someone can resonate with you, that's super important.
Yeah.
And there's many organizations, however, there's many threshold as well, right? There's a, you know, what they call it, the higher end one, what they call it, young,
yeah,
YOP or YPO, something like that,
mm-hmm.
right? They have a stretch requirement you have to meet to be able to join.
Yes.
But I think I do believe what they call it, a peer coaching ish.
Yeah,
kind mm-hmm. of, right? So I do find that very valuable. The piece of wisdom from other industry, other entrepreneur, I've been there, done that. May not be in your industry, but like. Certain things, all the business share certain commonality, right? So,
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the community is very important. I think advisor, coaching, whatever you call it, or mentor is very important. Another thing is, I think family support, like you have a supporting, your family support it or your friends support
it,
that's super important as well, because it's not for everyone. It's frontier.
No. And it's funny, Jasmine, because you're mommy and money. It's like the my biggest supporters were my children.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, do it. You can do it. We just believe in you. Okay. We just totally believe in you. You can do anything. And I'm like,
yeah,
I love it. I feel like a superhero.
Yeah. And I also noticed, you know, back to the corporate world, we noticed a lot of women started with a man and together. I don't want to generalize the thing, but
no, like, of course.
In reality, the stats do show, at the entry level, man and woman roughly the same. One climb the ladder, woman, you know, either drop out of the career or, you know, due to family reasons, to raise children, whatever, right? So they just stop the career, or the career stagnates. So that's why I like to create a community for mommy and money. Let's talk about money. Let's talk about the family wealth generation and the preservation.
I
And
love that.
besides climb the corporate ladder, that's fine if that's the route you choose, or you want to be entrepreneur. If you be entrepreneur, you know, what's the route you can take? Because there's a lot of smart people either, I would say, middle or even executive level, and they just stuck. Like they don't know, you know, what's way to go. They have to behave like a man, to be very masculine, you know,
Yes, right.
Sometimes appears to be mean, sometimes to be very powerful.
Yeah.
But like, it don't have to be in that way, I feel. Like I just want to push the boundary a little bit for other mother, especially, you know, I have young kids, 3 and 5. Especially the young kids that are very demanding. So I do find a lot of people say, my family is my priority right now. I better probably take a pause or less time spent on the career. But sometimes I want to, you know, not say provide example, at least to see how other women doing it, like how they
Yeah.
manage it. I don't like call it a family life balance, but I do believe
No, yeah.
you can have it all. May not be the same
Yeah.
time, but like, there must be a balance at some point. Yeah.
There is, and I'd like to comment on it if you don't mind, some
Yeah,
of what
sure.
you said, because I think it's maybe appropriate for your podcast in general. When I was in my public accounting career and I was rounding my eighth year there, I was in line for partner. And I hadn't had babies yet. I was just getting married. And I knew that I didn't want that life as a mother. And you couldn't talk about having babies because they wouldn't promote you. And so, but this is a long time ago. I'm much, 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 much older than you now. However, so I left right at before I made partner and went to work for my client. So the corporate office was much more lenient for that. And in a CPA firm, you were honestly, the hours were excessive during this
I
period
know,
of time right
my
now.
husband's still
Okay,
working
like,
for public accounting firm. I know,
yes.
yeah.
Yes. Okay. And, you know, I mean, it was like, you'd have a war room in your house, you know, you'd have, anyway, the long and short of it is I went to corporate and had my family there. And I do think, I mean, here's the thing is you can't go it alone when you have a big career, and a husband that works. I mean, a lot of the women I knew, their husbands stayed home. Mine did not. And you know, had a lot of support. I had nannies, I had, you know, and when you go home, it's about the kids. Okay. Because they need it. I mean, and so, and then you, like you said, talked about time, Jasmine, time you never get back, you know, and I look at your children and mine are 23 and 20 right now. And I'm like, you know, did I light up? What did I do when I came home from a stressful day? You know, and how did I show up for those children? And, you know, I wasn't perfect. Nobody's perfect. But I did my best. I always tell them, and we talk about it now. Like, I did my best and showed to them. I think it's beautiful for them to see a successful woman and somebody who can, you know, it looks like you can do it all, but you have a lot of help.
Of course, you need an army of help, either sacrifice your
Yes,
partner's
yes,
career or your
yes.
parents' entire life
Yes.
or the money you buy other people's time, nanny,
Yeah.
whatever, chef, whatever you needed to
That's
make the
right.
house running.
That's
Totally
right.
get it. And I have some friends that are even willing to, you know, put their own paycheck to have the support. He's like, I know I don't really save money from my paycheck. At least
Yeah.
my career didn't stop. Because,
Yes.
you know, once you stop, you need, I don't know, 3 to 5 years to catch back. Then you're always behind compared to
Yeah.
peers. I'm not
Yeah.
saying this is a competition, but that's just reality. Maybe
Yeah.
take a pause.
It's a
Yeah.
choice. It's a
It's a
choice.
choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I
It's
think
a choice.
that's a real choice. Yeah.
It's
Where
so
I
true.
knew if I stayed in public accounting, I would take a back seat. I wouldn't be a partner as soon if I'm having babies. And then, but in the corporate office, it was easier. It was, you know, even as an executive, I was an executive then when I had my kids, and you know, it was easier to navigate that outside of the public accounting world.
Yes, because in a public accounting world, your time is the product.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, right. The corporate, at least, no matter what you do, there's a product selling. So slightly different. Yeah, that's why a lot of public accounting people actually go to corporate at a certain age or in a certain life stage. Yeah, totally. Yeah, today I really want to dive into a little bit about buy and sell. I think that buy and sell, right, business. I think that's your expertise, and also that's something I'm learning and doing, and I think we're on this journey together.
Yeah.
What do you see is the hardest thing to do? A lot of people think either overthinking about it or think it is way easier. You know, oh, just buying, you know, a cash flow business. You know, it's just, for some reason they can sell for, you know, multiple whatever. Yeah, but it is hard. No matter you buy it or build it from scratch, it is hard. Business is hard. I grew up with a small business. I know how hard it
Yeah.
is. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Well, okay. So I think that you'd be in a better position. So I love that we're sort of in the same space because you're an awesome planner. So I think that that's one of the keys is that you don't plan enough in the beginning, particularly for integration. And it depends on what you're buying, but like in my past, most of what I was buying were people, you know, it's like buying a CPA firm. You're buying humans that are going to do work that have feelings and emotions.
Right.
And so it's not like you're buying a bunch of robots yet.
Right.
Okay. So not spending enough time in the beginning, thinking about what is it going to be like for the employees, analyzing, what were their benefits? What are they going to get here? How do I communicate? Even if they got better benefits, one of the pitfalls I've seen is it's not communicated well enough. They're not onboarded enough. So it depends on what you're buying. But the biggest, I mean, I think the biggest challenge is this. Outside of that, I just wanted to tie that to your background because I think you are really good at that. So one of the biggest issues is that finding a, I'll call it a target, finding a business to buy a target takes a lot of time. And it's not just that you show up and say, hey, knock on the door. Do you want to sell your business? No, it's like you're building a relationship. And so oftentimes, so that runway of building that relationship takes a while. And if you don't, then trust isn't built.
Yeah.
But the other problem on this journey, this path of, you know, obstacles is that by the time you get to the fact that like, I really like you and you really like me and let's go in business together, you look at their financial statements and their financial statements are crap. And then they're not meeting your threshold for being an investor. And then it's like, okay, then you're disappointed. And what I see happen, and I'm less like this because I'm usually more objective, is that you still want to do the deal. And that's what they call falling in love. That's what they call falling in love, rose-colored glasses, because you're like, oh my God, that took so long. It's like when you're dating, you like, I don't want to see the red flags, right?
Yeah.
I think, and it's so it's so disappointing. I had to deliver the news last night to an entrepreneur who's been, I'm going to say, nursing this situation and for a long time. And he didn't, he looked at the financial statements, but he didn't know, like there's some pitfalls in looking at the financial statements that are just easy. And when you look at financial statements and you look at their EBITDA, you think, oh, it's really good. And then you realize they didn't pay themselves any salary. We're going to have to hire somebody.
Yep.
Then it's really not good. Okay. So let's put in the salary, you know, let's put in the taxes. That's a common pitfall, but there are others, you know, misclassifying things. And I think that's the biggest thing. And the other thing is that from the very beginning, when you get an acquisition target, you want to be listening to what the seller is saying and what they're not saying. A lot of times people aren't upfront about their desires because they want the sell. And I believe that if you're just open and transparent about what you want, you will find a buyer that can mitigate those things. So let's say you want to leave after 2 years, or let's say you don't want to come in at all. Well, let's talk about that and let's mitigate those risks. And so one of the things that I like to do in the very, very beginning is listen to what's being said, what isn't being said, What am I seeing? In fact, I like to get involved in the personality before I actually look at the numbers, because everything tells a story. So you're looking for the story. Is the audio matching the visual, what they're saying, really what I see in the financial statements, and assessing that as a partner. So that's the other thing I see is, you're getting in business with somebody and you're not, maybe not spending, that's the other flip side, is you're not spending enough time. And then there isn't the trust. And so you've got problems from the very beginning. And so I'm seeing that as well, because you can get a target that says, yes, I want to sell. You can go on the business broker, list and just pick somebody out and they want to sell. But it's really about that relationship. And we know this, okay, like business is about relationships. It's 100%. So nothing is worse than buying something that isn't working out, or that you have, problems working together, or whatever that is. And I can work with anybody, but you don't know what you're getting.
Exactly.
And so those are where the headaches come in. These are where, I think Adam Coffey, who we both know, he talks about there's no pain worse than, getting a bad acquisition or buying a bad acquisition. And because it takes you years. So you talk about time, Jasmine, it takes you years to overcome that so that you can go on and be profitable. So, and that isn't a joke. That's real. That I've seen that. I've done that.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I totally get it. What do you say? The breakup moment. I was working on a deal
Tell me about it. Yeah. 3 months. Literally. Yeah.
3 months working on the deal, then didn't work out. Really sad. Feels sad, right? You need emotional attached to it a little bit. What if we do this? What if we do that? Made that work, blah, blah. But sometimes probably just the best, just walk away is the best option, probably. Best haven't come yet, I guess.
It is. And it's really hard to do. What I try to do always, Jasmine, is I try to say, okay, and this has worked for me. And maybe this, you've done this as well, is I point out where the issues are, and then I can actually give some suggestions that, well, maybe if you increase your price, or maybe if you can, whatever, I'll give some suggestions and say, work on your business and let's keep talking. Let's check in a quarter. Yep. Let's check in a year. And what's happened is I've reeled them back and we've actually done an acquisition then. So again, it's not a complete goodbye. It's I'll see you later. Instead of a close the door, it's the door is sort of open.
Gotcha. Yeah. Totally get it. I have a friend who acquired a company. It's his first deal and he bought it. Then he ended up fire everybody, pretty much rebuild the team. Then he got himself pretty much a job.
Yeah.
To build that company. Yeah. To maintain the clients, etc. It's a little bit like a shit show.
It's like a shit show.
And sometimes I ask him, would you do this again? Because there's a thing, right? We all know smaller deals everywhere. It's easier to buy smaller firms. Smaller companies, smaller firms. However, they do take a lot more effort and time. And sometimes end up buying yourself a job. And, the thing is, but if you don't have a small, you don't get your foot in the door, but it's harder to acquire a big target, because the big target, they, looking for a bigger target, right? They want someone have a stronger background, or, be able to take care of their clients and the employees. But I feel that's a little bit, I always back and forth. That's a little bit dynamic for me.
I get that. And one of the things that I've been talking to folks about is that maybe what I do, because I'm looking at doing it myself now. So I'm helping others and I'm looking to do it myself. So just to clarify that, but I'm looking for others that don't know how to do this, that are bigger with a bigger EBITDA, where I can go in, get equity when we merge the two together and then build it and then help them, because I don't want to buy myself a job. I already have a job.
Exactly. one job.
And oftentimes, and this is the other thing I'm seeing with the people in my clients, are they're buying businesses that aren't in around where they live. So how would they run it if something went haywire,
Unless the management in place, still need to spend time.
Exactly. So it's complicated, but I feel like it's so worthwhile and fun. And all the obstacles and things are challenges and opportunities to have more fun and make more money, but you want to do it with the right people, because when it's bad, you want to be high-fiving and going, okay, we will be better tomorrow. You know,
break up early. I learned the hard way as well. A certain partner probably do not work out, probably have to break up way early, but you drag along that emotional attachment. Maybe, you know, we can work this out. Absolutely. 100% agree. And all the life lessons learning hard way. Yes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. No, I love it though. It's a fun place to be.
Yeah. But speaking of working with a team or working with a partner, but people's action tied to their incentives. Key person equity. So some people may not have money, right? Say they have the expertise, then they have a technical know-how for that type of a key person. Do we recruit the beginning as equity partner, or we build up that equity, or what's the common way for us to do that?
Yeah, I mean, it depends, but what I love to do, it always depends, right? But if they don't roll over equity and they don't have skin in the game, so that's one way of doing it, because that's a way of financing your acquisition too. If they don't have that, and sometimes you can't do that, and in a lot of my purchasing, I didn't have the option to do that. The stock wasn't available. So I could give phantom stock, but I couldn't give that. So what I did was a hefty earnout. So people go, there's some people you're going to talk to that say, I hate earnouts. And then there are some people, and I'm going to talk about those people. Some people that are like, yes, earnouts. And I'm a yes earnouts person. So what I would do is I would do a hefty earnout. So if I needed them to stay for 3 years or whatever it was, usually 2 to 3 years, you can't get anything done in 1 year usually I can't say that usually, but generally. Okay. So I want 2 to 3 years I'm trying to make my money back. Right. Yep. And so I would do some sort of a split or some sort of bonus on profit that they brought in. Mm-hmm. And the key to this is why earnouts are bad is the seller. Oftentimes you get in a disagreement about the earnout or the control. So imagine this, I invite you into my company. I buy it. I say, Jasmine, I'm going to give you, let's say, 50% of the profits in the next 3 years. And you're like, well, do I have decision over how to make those profits? You'll say, well, you know, what's the accounting like? You know, is there funny money accounting? Or are you going to allocate this hefty corporate overhead to me? I mean, there's questions, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so I think where the devil is in the details here. Okay. So what I would do with these earnouts is I would specifically define what it looked like, what the actual, I would give him or her a statement of this is what it's going to look like. You're not going to take on any corporate overhead. You have complete control over these five things. I'm going to measure you on these five things. We're going to meet and talk about it, so you know how you're doing. I'm going to hear your obstacles, your corporate obstacles. So I was like I'm the integration Sherpa of the seller, coming into the company to make sure that it's clear, we're communicating, I'm removing obstacles, and you're feeling engaged and you trust me more. Listen, we're like partners. So it's a win-win. So some earnouts, what I've seen is it's very hard. They think they're getting screwed and then they're angry. Yep. And then you've got an emotional problem along with the fact that so it depends, but I like to incentivize every seller. I always wanted them to come and be on board. I never was the lights off, go away. I was never that kind of a buyer. Mm-hmm. And so it was always about a relationship and cultivating that. So it's phantom stock. It's an earnout. It's just getting creative on the deal. It's what they want. You know, that's the other thing. It's like, what is it they want? Some of the sellers just wanted some time.
Yeah.
To do whatever it is, golfing or whatever it was. And it's like, okay, well, if you meet these metrics, I don't care what you do.
Exactly.
Yep. Go do that. Like, let's have you be that. So, so it depends, but that's the kind of things that I like to do to get them engaged and part of the team.
Gotcha. But the earnout and seller financing, that different thing, right? It may look financially the same, but they're totally different thing, right?
Totally different, because what happens is, from an accounting standpoint, usually an earnout's the next 12 months. Usually you do it the next 12 months or calendar year, whatever it is. But what you do is you take a look at that, and that is characterized different than the acquisition. And so it's a bonus. It's characterized different. And sometimes they don't like that because it's ordinary income. So you've got to get a great tax person instead of capital gains. So I'm not tax. I dabble in tax. I'm like enough to be dangerous, but like we always try to figure out how to make it, like as a buyer, I always tried to figure out how to make it the best tax-wise for the seller, and I would help them. And even sometimes I would get my experts to help them. So, you have to, I've even gone the route of helping pay their taxes, like grossing it up and paying their taxes, because it's going to be better for me to do that than something else. So
I
you look at the
see.
cost benefit of that and negotiate that. Again, we're talking about bringing in more experts, attorneys that can help you too. And then your tax accountant is your savior.
Gotcha. Totally. Yeah, sometimes they just part of the team, and they, of course, they're expensive. Sometimes deal do not work out. That's sunk cost. But like, I
I
guess that's just
know.
the expense of doing business. Do the business
Yes.
right, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Rather than cleaning up. I've been that
Yes.
before. I've been there before as
Yeah.
well. So
Yep.
learn
Yep.
hard way.
I mean, it's going to be cheaper for you. I mean, it's hard in the moment. It'll be cheaper for you to walk away with those sunk costs than actually do the deal and deal with the costs that are going to come later, like an
Oh yeah,
avalanche,
absolutely.
right?
That cost you probably
Yeah.
didn't see at the moment, but they
No, exactly.
come to you really, hefty
Yeah.
cost later. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
think there's a, yeah, obviously there's a lot details in the acquisition, and then I think it's a lot much harder because I get used to the VC world. Find a deal, do the DD, then wire the money, then goodbye. If you need something, let me know. Introduce you some key resource or clients or whatever. But the like a move up to the stream to the PE world, I feel this is a lot more work from either investor or acquire, for the do the acquisition. Yeah, a lot more work, a lot
Yeah,
more.
I like that. I like the VC world. That sounds pretty good to me, Jasmine. I mean,
But you have to
just
do a lot
have
of
the
deal though.
fun. I mean, but it's fun though. It's like you get to see all the new companies and all that. And here I'm giving you, it's like birthing a baby. It's like, here's your baby, here's your money, and go make, wonderful things happen and grow your EBITDA and you leave. It's beautiful.
The VC world has its own problem. VC
Yeah.
tend to no cash flow. Right now, that's what we're doing.
Yes.
PE, we buy a cash flow business. VC, you may see that money in 10 years, or you may never see that money
Yeah.
again. And at
Yeah.
least doing a smaller, PE deal, at least even you lose some money, at least you see some money. It's not,
Yeah, yeah.
really. And the return probably, cannot compare with the VC. However, still, it's a risk-adjusted return. So, I think that's the reason I move up a little bit to the smaller PE world. I
Yeah.
like the cash flow, and I like actually being part of the business, actually really help the business, and also have a
Yes.
lot of synergy with my own business, right? So VC, it's my passion. Like, I love the startup, I love the passion, I love cutting edge.
Yes.
But I just try to balance a little bit more now. Even I personally invest more on the growth stage, because in the early stage you have to invest a lot. I just don't have a time. Large deal and smaller deal take the same amount of money and a
Yeah.
same amount of time, I should say.
Time.
But the time is my limitation, unless you really grow the team, and that's come with cost, etc.
Yeah,
So.
I mean, sorry to interrupt you, Jasmine. I was going to say about the time, and even in acquisitions, the smaller deals oftentimes can take more time than the bigger deals. So you do want to, so I just wanted to interrupt that thought because I'm like, I'll forget it. Okay, like as we keep going, but and I'm going to tell you why that is. So like, let's buy as big a companies as we can handle, financially. That's what I'm going to say, as that we can finance, because what happens with a small business, what I found is that it's more time consuming. It's a more of a time trap. And the reason why is because oftentimes you have a seller that is not, I mean, it's their first time they've ever sold anything. Mm-hmm. It's their biggest transaction in their life. Mm-hmm. They're looking at it from a big perspective, and they're not, they don't understand the process, and they haven't educated. So they're not aware of the process. So what happens is you end up training them as you go, and they struggle with each milestone because they don't understand it. Even to the terms of EBITDA and cash flow, often times entrepreneurs are not in the numbers. And so they're thinking, oh, I'm doing well. And anyway, the long and short of it is what I found is it's more emotional. It's more time consuming. You're training them. They get help that is not boutique specific. So for example, they go hire their friend who's an attorney. The legal agreements are a mess because they point out things that are insignificant. And we start fighting over insignificant things, not fighting, but like negotiating over insignificant things. And my attorney knows, you know, acquisitions, and they're like, that's ridiculous. And so then distrust is built into the system. Then you have to overcome that. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then they get bad tax planning. And so what's happening is it's almost like you're trying to carry them through the process. And if they allow it, that's good. But sometimes then trust is because they think, oh, you're just trying to get the best price. And for me, I'm going to tell you what, Jasmine, I'm not about that. I'm not about screwing anybody over. I never did that. I was never about a legal agreement that was onerous to the seller. I was like, let's make it fair. Like all my agreements were like, equally fair, equally indemnified, everything, you know? And so, so I know that, and the seller doesn't know that, you know, a larger buyer typically has better professional help that can guide them and say, hey, they're being reasonable here. This is what, and then, you know, you're like chugging along down the milestones a little bit easier. So that's why I said that time we've talked, I mean, time is like our theme, you know, today. Yeah. Time, So if you can buy a bigger one, it's almost better. That's what I'm going to say. So
Gotcha. Yeah, I got, that's the advice I got from multiple people, many different advisors. They said, buy as big as you can. I guess my challenge is maybe I just didn't find the right channel to find the bigger one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right now, I tried to buy the first one local, right? So I did reach out to a whole bunch of people I know on the bigger side. Yeah, that's my approach. More like a proprietor deal flow, like off market, because online is not that much. It's through broker dealer, it's just a smaller one. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
accounting world. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of, I think you're right. I think going and calling firms that are really attractive to you that are not on the market, sending them collateral about who you are, like something snazzy, okay, about who you are and what you're trying to do. You don't know what you're dealing with all age groups. So some people like the mail still. Okay. You know, and right. Okay. And so you mail, you call, you do digital, you do it all. Right. And then you follow up, and then you just follow up and get in the door that way. I think that's the best way. Cause like the listing of business, I don't know. My best deals were the ones that just came organically. And some of them through a broker. I did enjoy the brokers because it's more controlled dating.
Yep.
And controlled getting and organized, and time is shorter when you have a good broker on the other side.
Yep. Oh yeah. Sometimes they could be role broker as well. You don't know what's their incentive tying to right now. Actually, because I'm also affiliated with another private equity firm, we do on digital mining side, do much bigger deal with them.
Yeah.
Sometimes you do feel there's the broker, you don't know, investment banker. Larger deal is an investment banker.
Yes, investment banker. Yeah, right.
Same thing. You're right. Small ones, business broker, larger ones, investment banker. But like, but they control the process. Yeah.
Sometimes they want the biggest price for their seller because they are getting a commission.
Exactly. And, five round of bidding, that, that, exhausting, that type of
It's
process.
I
Spiral
agree.
beating, my
No,
gosh.
I've been in it. Okay, I've been in it. I know. You
Yeah,
know.
yeah, 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 yeah. It's funny, the spectrum of the MA world, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's a fun place to be, but again, like it's hard work. And you know, like I think how we started even the conversation is get people to help you. You know, get
Yeah.
people that are good, that are in that space that can help you, you know, navigate around the obstacles and create the opportunities there, and get back some of your time that you're going to waste when things don't go well.
Yeah, I think the thing is really find good people, either good advisor or good partners, good deal. Yeah, good people, work with good people. Yes.
Good people that you like and that you want to have fun with. Those were my, like, I did like my values, and I was like, okay, well, we have to have, I love to work. I'm all about hard work, but like, let's have some fun and some laughs in between, you know, because life is
Yes.
too serious. And so,
Right.
we don't have to take ourselves or life or business so serious,
Exactly. Yes.
and work hard, both.
Yes. Totally. Totally. Yeah. It's very nice to chatting with you. I would love chatting more, but I really value your time as well. And
Thank you.
I think today we just thank you so much for this. And we will, cut in contact, and we can share deals together, do deals together, and always keep in touch, support each other.
Absolutely. Well, I always love talking to you. Thank you for having me on the podcast. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.